Hare Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada taught us to do before giving initiation, we should speak on the meaning of initiation and on the 10 offenses to be avoided in the matter of chanting the holy names. Actually, those who are taking initiation, they should already have a good idea of what the meaning of initiation is. It's not that they should be sitting here and they don't really know what it's all about, and then all of a sudden they find out. Actually, Srila Prabhupada did that in the first initiations that he gave in America. He himself brought devotees, or he told them, you should take initiation. Because they didn't have any idea what initiation, they didn't have any idea about anything. Nothing. Absolutely nothing about Krishna consciousness. It's difficult for us to imagine how ignorant Srila Prabhupada's first disciples were about Krishna consciousness, which also gives us some insights into how empowered Srila Prabhupada was to take people who had absolutely no knowledge of any culture, any spiritual philosophy, what to speak of Krishna or his holy names, and then Srila Prabhupada has empowered such people to themselves become acting as instruments of the parampara, as gurus. By empowered, I mean, Srila Prabhupada gave the knowledge, yeah. The Buddhir yasya balam tasya, states Hitopadesh. One who has intelligence, he has power. intelligence means there must be some knowledge also. So Srila Prabhupada gave this. And if one is to be a disciple, one approaches a guru for the sake of acquiring spiritual knowledge of the spiritual science. Tad vigyan artam sagurum eva bigachet. For the sake of acquiring that spiritual knowledge, one should approach a guru. That spiritual knowledge means the knowledge that is beyond everything of this material world. Now, to approach a guru for the sake of acquiring such knowledge, one requires some initial knowledge. For instance, another example that Srila Prabhupada often gave, if you want to purchase a diamond, you have to have some initial knowledge about what a diamond is. If you go in the Sabji Bazaar and ask, give me a diamond, do you have still here open bazaars like that? No, everything's in packets now. Do you have bazaars still here, open, selling vegetables? Still they have it here. I think in Singapore maybe you don't have, is it? Everything's in shops and packets. Still they have bazaars, okay. So if you go in the bazaar and on the side of the road someone is selling durian and you ask, then I want to buy a diamond. He says, I have very good durians but no diamonds. So if you don't know the difference between a diamond and a durian, then of course some people may think that durian is better than diamonds. Many people may think like that, but one should have some knowledge, otherwise one is going to be cheated. Because one may have some vague idea, oh, a diamond, it looks like this, but someone can sell some glass beads, they look the same. But unless you have some proper knowledge, you're going to be cheated. Mm. Now in the case of Srila Prabhupada's first disciples, they had no idea. Well, actually they had some idea of what a guru is. Many of them had read books, but all bogus books. And they'd heard from Srila Prabhupada about, somewhat about a guru, but then when he told them, you should take initiation. It's not the usual process. Usual process that a person approaches a guru, not that the guru says, here, you come and take initiation. But in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada had to do that because they didn't have any idea. And when, after they had taken initiation, Srila Prabhupada, some devotees, when they said, now Prabhupada said you should take initiation, and they asked, well, what does that mean? And then Srila Prabhupada said to them, that means that you accept the Guru as good as God. And they were astonished, because Srila Prabhupada had been preaching to them so much that the Guru is not God. Anyone who claims, any so-called guru who claims himself to be God is simply a cheater and a rascal. Because at that time in America, there was some so-called guru from India who promoted himself as being directly Krishna. He was a rascal and a nonsense. And Prabhupada pointed it out, that the guru is a representative of Krishna. So the first ones, Srila Prabhupada's first disciples, they were shocked when Srila Prabhupada said that you have to accept the Guru as good as God. That's actually the proper understanding, that the Guru is to be accepted as good as God. Of course, it's proper understanding, but they had, Srila Prabhupada had emphasized to them that the Guru is not God directly. He'd emphasized that so much because the misunderstanding was being propagated so much that the Guru is God. So he is and he isn't. It's to understand all these things requires some higher level of knowledge. For instance, I have heard, probably many of you have heard, that in higher levels of physics, something which is considered a particle may instead be considered a wave. But how can it be a particle and a wave? Well, it can't be both, but it is both, depending on how you conceive of it. So the position of the observer, the consciousness of the observer, becomes integrated into science. It's actually a very philosophical concept which has bugged scientists for more than 100 years now. They still couldn't work it out, how to really put together quantum physics with classical physics. Please don't take photos, just listen. But it is understandable at some level, but one has to be trained in understanding. If one wants to learn about physics, one has to approach a proper teacher. One has to have some initial idea of what the subject is about. And one has to have some idea of who is competent to teach. So Srila Prabhupada said the Guru is good as God. That means one has to surrender to the Guru. It's a great challenge or a great commitment. Most gurus don't give a very high level of commitment. Actually, Srila Prabhupada was extremely lenient in initiating people. They thought he was being very tough. And up to the present day, observers of religions, they think the Hare Krishna movement, it's very tough and very strict. You have all these rules. No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. Those are the basic rules, but there are actually many, many more rules. But actually Srila Prabhupada was very lenient. When it was conveyed to Srila Prabhupada that Allen Ginsberg, a somewhat prominent person of that time, had said that Srila Prabhupada is very conservative, Srila Prabhupada is very surprised. Me, conservative? I mean, Prabhupada thought of himself as being extremely liberal, because the people that Srila Prabhupada was dealing with and their attitudes and their... If anyone was conservative, he would never deal with such people. He wouldn't... They're not acceptable as students. Srila Prabhupada, he made so many adjustments. So Srila Prabhupada considered himself very liberal. If we were to actually insist that the disciples be disciples according to the traditional standards, then probably there wouldn't be any members of the Hare Krishna movement. There wouldn't be, because what you have to be a disciple, it requires a very high level of commitment and surrender. Srila Prabhupada is widely reputed to have said that I am 80% more lenient than my Guru Maharaj. And actually, having studied the standards of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and of our own Srila Prabhupada, the 80% seems to be a generous statement. It seems to be more. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very strict. But even then, he considered himself to be very lenient. When that's described, one of his senior brahmachari disciples, his sister came to visit him at the Gauriya Math, and she was shocked to see that these sadhus, they're sleeping on beds with mosquito nets. Bed, I can imagine what it is, because I lived in Bengal so many years. Bed means you have some rough planks which are nailed, and it's a very rough construction. It's not how much to buy a bed here in Johor Bahru would cost, probably, I don't know, at least, what, 500 ringgit or something, is it? More than a thousand ringgit. But this kind of thing, the kind of beds that I've seen as standard in Bengal, among the ordinary people, no one would even consider it a bed. They'd consider it's only useful for firewood. A very rough kind of thing. But that was sadhus. Oh, sleeping on beds, using mosquito nets. You shouldn't have such things. And using shoes. And again, the shoes would be some rough wooden shoes. But sadhus. Wearing, she was shocked at how much comforts were there. What to speak of using motor cars. It was shocking for many people. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he allowed this. Eating food in the morning. Some people who joined the Gauriya Math, they were shocked, because Brahmins, they don't eat food in the morning. In traditional Brahmin culture, you can eat maximum twice a day. It means once in between sunrise and sunset, and once after sunset. Maximum twice a day. There's no question of snacking in between. So they would take some little breakfast, and then again at midday, and then at night. And some people were shocked. How is this? How can they do this? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself, although apparently very strict, he was actually very liberal in many ways, just to bring people into Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada was very, very liberal. To be a disciple actually requires a very high level of commitment. We see that some gurus, famous gurus in Vaishnava tradition, they hardly gave initiation. Lokanath Goswami, he had vowed not to give anyone initiation, but he had his vow broken by Narottam Das, who he couldn't refuse him because Narottam Das served him in such a manner that he couldn't refuse him. And then Narottam Das himself took many, many thousands of disciples, and his disciples, many of them, they also took many disciples. So there are different approaches to among those who are initiating. Some may be very strict and take a few disciples. Some may be very liberal in giving initiation. But from the disciple's point of view, he shouldn't think, well, I need a liberal guru who will let me do whatever I like and I'll just get Krishna Prem. Just guru will give me Krishna Prem. It's a cheating mentality. The guru may be liberal, but he shouldn't encourage a cheating mentality. Srila Prabhupada was very liberal in distributing Krishna consciousness, but at the same time, he spoke very strongly. He was very willing to accommodate people, bring them into Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, he preached the truth of the actual reality, that this material world is nonsensical. It's miserable. Our attachment to it is simply the cause of our bondage within it, which is the cause of our suffering, birth after birth. Therefore, tad vijnanartham sagurum eva bigachit. If one has at least come to this level of wanting to go beyond this material situation, then one should approach a guru. If one is interested in enjoying this material world, then there's no need to approach a guru. Of course, if one is completely uninterested in enjoying this material world, then you may say, well, you also don't need a guru, because you're already liberated. But even if one is so detached from this world that one has renounced it, still one needs to be, which most people aren't on that level. They may have some theoretical understanding of that. But even if one is by knowledge liberated from this world, still he needs to be taught about the world beyond. Parastasmat tu bhava no vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha yassa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Beyond this world, which is created and destroyed again and again, there is the spiritual world, which is not created and destroyed again and again. So we need knowledge of that. Having understood that everything in this world is miserable and temporary, we need to get knowledge of that which is blissful and eternal. But that world is not this world. That world is not visible in this world. Therefore, we have to be given the eye, Shastra Chakshu. We have to be given the eyes of Shastra so that we can also see that world. But for that purpose, we have to approach Tattva Darshi, one who has seen the reality. They can help us to see. There may be many people who are knowledgeable in Shastra, but they have wrong understandings. They're not. They may be tattva-darshi, they are interested in tattva, in philosophical understanding, but they don't see it in the right way. There's the example of the blind men groping the elephant. They all come to different conclusions as to what an elephant is. They don't have the overall picture. So there are various people who study Shastra, and they come to various conclusions, which are... then the conclusions, they may not be wholly wrong. We know that there are six major philosophical systems based on the Vedas, and they all have some value to them. They all have some value in understanding the Vedic message, but because they don't have the full understanding, their ultimate conclusion of all of them is incorrect, with the exception of Vyasadeva's Purva Mimamsa. So Vyasadeva has given Vedanta, and especially is understood in Srimad Bhagavatam. So those who are followers of Vedanta, they understand that this world is miserable and temporary. But even they may have understood that, but they still need, if they're not enlightened by a Vaishnava, they still need to go to a Vaishnava guru who can properly explain about Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. That is Sambandha Gyan. Then there is Abhideya, which means how to act in this world in that relationship, to begin to re-establish our relationship so that we can attain to our prayojana, Krishna prema, the ultimate necessity of life. So there are many, many things to be learned. Many things to be learned. The basic thing we have to understand, Jiveh Shurup Hoi Krishna Nittodas, Krishna Tatashta Shakti Bhida Bhid Prakash, the living being. But that's the first thing. We're not the body. We are living spirit souls, eternal spirit souls. We are the eternal servants of Krishna. We are different and non-different from Krishna. Both different and non-different in an inconceivable way, being his marginal potency. So this is the basic thing to understand. But even the basic thing to understand, it's very deep philosophy to understand achintya bheda bheda. It's not 2 + 2 = 4, which is easily understandable for most people. There's also a difficulty in understanding, from our perspective, it's actually not difficult to understand, but difficulty in understanding, we don't understand how we are the servant of Krishna because we are attached to an erroneous sense of independence from Krishna, which is our whole problem. Why doesn't everyone understand this philosophy of Krishna consciousness? Because everyone is attached to being non-Krishna conscious, not surrendering to Krishna. So there are many things to learn. Guru means spiritual master, spiritual teacher. Disciple means has to learn and has to surrender. The process of learning. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshana. One has to approach one who knows. How can we know who knows if we don't know? It's a quandary. We have to learn from someone who knows. But if we don't know, then how do we know who to approach? Because so many people say, I know, I know, I know. So there are some checks and balances. Tadvijnanartham sagarum eva abhigacchati. There's samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. These are the two basic qualifications. The guru himself should have heard in an authorized parampara. Not that someone just pops up and says, I'm a guru. But he should have his antecedents. He should come in and recognized parampara. And should be firmly fixed in understanding spiritual knowledge as manifested in his behavior. Someone who is a worldly sense enjoyer is clearly not on the spiritual platform. Because if one is on the spiritual platform, he's not interested in worldly sense enjoyment. So like that example, if one is to purchase a diamond, one has to have some initial knowledge so he's not cheated. But at the same time, it will require some good fortune, some luck, Who will get a bona fide guru? It requires some luck. Ramanda Brahmite Kono Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Abij. It requires some luck. Kono Bhagyavanji, one who is very fortunate. Now that luck isn't entirely like some gambling, something like that. I have to speak on this. I spoke on that, that bhakti is independent and supreme. Actually, I have to speak some, there are 8 sessions I did, but there I have to speak some more on that, whenever that comes up again, when I start speaking in English again. It's a very important topic. What does it mean? Bhakti is not caused. Anyway, however, by whatever means, those who are fortunate enough, they may find someone who can guide them toward the ultimate goal of life, which is surrender at the lotus feet of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give love beyond surrender, but surrender comes first. For us who are in the material world, who are fortunate to be able to avail of the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we know that that is love beyond surrender, but first surrender or taking shelter is required. Ashraya loya bhaje Krishna tare Krishna nahitaje arshab mare akaran. For those who perform devotional service, taking shelter, Krishna doesn't let them go. Others, they're simply living and dying without any purpose. So one should approach a tattva-darshi, tattva-vidhi, pranipatena, in humility, surrendering, bowing down, asking relevant questions. One should be eager to know. One comes as a student to learn. One has to learn. It's not simply a matter, now I'm initiated. Now I'm not just some visitor. Now I'm also initiated. Mark the date, because 20 years later I'll be a senior devotee. This all nonsense way of thinking. How I'll be recognized. One wants to be recognized by the guru for his submissive service attitude. But not that one should promote oneself. Now I'm doing so much, you should notice me, you should recognize me. Some of the greatest devotees, or actually all the greatest devotees, but they're all examples of outstanding humility. The example of Narottam Das, the only disciple of Lokanath Goswami. How he was able to practically force Lokanath to give him initiation when Lokanath was resolved not to give anyone initiation, because day after day Narottam would clean all the place where Lokanath would pass his daily stomach cleaning. And he would do this, he would clean, but he wouldn't be seen. He would not show himself. He would do the service and go away. And Lokanath realized someone is doing this, and he became indebted. So he felt obliged to the disciple. Actually, the disciple should feel obliged to the guru, but the guru will also be very pleased by the reciprocation of service by the disciple. Pariprasnena Seveya. Anyway, as I said, there is many, many topics to be spoken on this. Many, many things to understand. Basically, one has to understand. There's Krishna. My eternal relationship is with Krishna. Now I'm away from Krishna. I've turned away from Krishna. Krishna bhuli se jivan adi bahimuk. Atayiva maya tare daya shamsharaduk. Turning away from Krishna. I become inimical to Krishna, forgetting Krishna. I'm suffering in this material world because of that. Maya gives us so many troubles. So I should surrender to Krishna by the representative, guru, and in this way we can make progress on the path back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada was very liberal, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very liberal, but at the same time we should know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's liberality, it's not a license for sense gratification. It's an opportunity to come, to take up bhakti. But ultimately, if we are going to go back to Godhead, we have to become completely purified, completely free of all material attachments, completely free of all lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, kaam, krodh, and anger, all these bad qualities. And we have to be free from all misconceptions. So that requires much training, much surrender, much dedication. So liberality is there. Okay, people are ready to come. Let them come. Let them come in. People generally come for Chaturvidha Vajante Mam Jana Sukritin Arjuna Artho Jignyasu Artharti Jnani Cha Bharatashava. Mostly people don't come because they're knowledgeable, or they know that Krishna is supreme and I should surrender to him. That's one kind of person who takes up devotional service. Mostly people come because they want some material gain, or they're distressed, they want relief from distress. Some may come because they're curious but not committed. So we can extend, yes, you take to Krishna consciousness. But actually, one who is to be initiated should not be simply on the level, I want some money, I want this, I want that, I like prasadam. They should be on the level of dikkha kale bhakta kare ata samarpan. They should be on the level of surrender. That is required. So Hare Krishna, as it's a huge topic, so many things to be discussed. Therefore, hearing should go on. The disciples should have heard sufficiently from the guru to be able to commit that, yes, I must hear. I must go on here. I've heard enough from the guru that I'm convinced that by continuing to follow throughout my life and life after life, my requirement, my prayojan, my need of attaining Krishna prema, that will be fulfilled. So that much confidence should be there. When one is coming for initiation. So it's a very great topic. We should go on hearing. The hearing process is expanded in Kali Yuga by the reading process. Originally, spiritual knowledge is conveyed by the Shabda. Shabda Brahma, spiritual knowledge, conveyed by speaking and hearing. Vyasadeva, seeing the condition, or he comes, Vyas means who comes at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, to present that spoken knowledge in written form, at least not the original Shruti, but the Puranas, that is presented in written form. And he also gives Mahabharata, Vedanta Sutra, in written form. So reading, that is an extension of the hearing process. So go ahead. Initiation means the commitment to surrender, means to dedicate one's life in Krishna's service. According to one's situation, that is also accepted. It's not required that everyone take official sannyas, sthane sthita shutigatang tanubang marobe, one may remain in one's position, but one should dedicate one's life to hearing and serving Krishna in all respects. So hearing, reading, serving, the goal of life must be that now, after so many countless millions, billions, trillions, zillions, uncountable lives in this material world, now my commitment is turnam yatetana patadanu mrityayavam nishrayasa. Now I must attain, before I leave this body, I must attain the highest goal. That is the commitment. So the principal means of doing so in this Kali Yuga is by chanting the holy names of Krishna. Anyone can chant, but the full manifestation of the mercy of the holy name comes in those who chant inoffensively. Niraparadhe nama loile pai premadham. Yeah, you're standing in front of this camera also. So one should know what are the 10 offenses against the holy name. Ninda, sadhu ninda. What is first offense is to blaspheme. Sadhu, the word sadhu can be understood in so many ways. Basically, that means a devotee of Krishna, one for whom Krishna is his heart, and he is the heart of Krishna. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam sadhunam hridayam tvaham vadanyate na jananti naham tebhyo managapi. One who is, Krishna says, the sadhus are my heart, and because I am their heart. Why? Because they know nothing but me and I know nothing but them. So sadhus, especially Srila Prabhupada emphasized, those who are preaching Krishna consciousness, they should be not blasphemed. Ninda, the word ninda, Sanskrit word that can be translated as criticized, blasphemed. It means to make comments about in a spirit of dvish, and hostile attitude. So that is very dangerous in one's spiritual life. If one is envious of devotees, then even one may chant Hare Krishna, but will not get the result of chanting. Similarly, if one thinks that you can chant Krishna, Kali, Shiva, Durga, Sai Baba, and it's all the same, that's also an offense. Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ekale Ishvara Krishna, Arsha Bhritta. Krishna is supreme. All others are his servants. Even the great demigods are his servants. Shiva means auspicious. But his nature of being Shiva, of being auspicious, is derived from the supreme auspicious, Sadashiva, Vishnu. Only because he has the relationship with, of course that is eternal, his relationship, but only because his eternal relationship is with Vishnu, he's auspicious. And the demigods are great to the extent that they are devotees of Krishna. And anyone is great to the extent that they're a devotee of Krishna. So Krishna is the center. We should surrender to Krishna and understand that Krishna is supreme. To equate various demigods with Krishna is an offense to the holy name of Krishna. Having accepted a guru, to consider him an ordinary person, to neglect him, to disobey him, is a great offense. It's an offense to the holy name. Again, we can go on chanting the holy names, but if we do not submit ourselves to the Guru, if we don't have the proper attitude, then the holy name will not resonate within our hearts. Therefore, we have to be very careful in selecting to whom we shall go to surrender. Because if later we see, my guru is, he seems to be like a worldly enjoyer or something. We should be very clear in understanding who is our guru and surrender. Similarly to blaspheme the Vedic literature, that is also an offense to the holy name. The Vedic literatures reveal the holy name of Krishna. Please don't take photos. If you'd like to be here, please listen. You're so absorbed in that you can't even hear what I'm saying now. This is a great curse on mankind, these phones, photos, and people's attention is just diverted at every moment to all these WhatsApp and this and that. And we want to speak something serious, and the people, they don't know anything serious in their whole life. Just on the platform of trivia. So to think that the glories of the holy... I'm just going through very briefly here now, a bit tight on time. To think that the glories of the holy name is just something someone dreamed up, or they're overemphasizing it just to get people to chant. No, we should understand clearly. The holy name of Krishna is Krishna. Jainam Shri Krishna Bhajanishta Kare. The holy name is Krishna. There's no other interpretation. We shouldn't think that the glories are overly emphasized. Just if we, it may be thought, well, chanting the name of Krishna is good, but let's over, just like if you want advertisements, they always over advertise. If you see anything advertised, everything, you know what the advertisement says is not true. For instance, they may say they're trying to sell you some apartment building, and your dream home, the idea that if you purchase this apartment, it'll be so wonderful. But you know, they're over-glorifying it because they want you to buy it. If you tell them, well, it's just another apartment, just like any other apartment, then who will buy it? But if you say, oh, it's just like paradise, your perfect home, just what you always wanted, and then people might be interested. But if you just say, it's okay, you can live in it, which is what it is actually. So similarly, you may think, well, chanting the holy names is good, but let's just hype it up a bit and tell everyone it's more good. So that it's good for them. So people should live in an apartment. Okay, they need to live in an apartment. It's good for them to live in an apartment. Previously in this, what's now called Malaysia, people didn't used to live in apartments. They didn't. They just lived in some rough, ramshackle building. They didn't. So what I heard, to the Malay people, first of all, when the government wanted them to be in some remote places, maybe in Perak and Terengganu and all these places, people, they're not accustomed to living in houses. So the government built them all houses, but still they slept outside, and they didn't live in the house. And they gave them furniture, and they covered the furniture with cloth and sit on the floor. So then they have to get accustomed. You have to accustom that and say, actually, it's very civilized. They had no idea before they were uncivilized. So it's very civilized to live in a house and sit on a chair like this, which actually isn't very comfortable. I'd probably be more comfortable sitting on the floor. Some overemphasis to sell it. But no, actually, all the glories of the Holy Name are actually true, which is another reason we don't, it's another offense to preach the glories of the Holy Name to people who are not inclined to believe those glories, because then they'll blaspheme the Holy Name even more. Another of the glories of the Holy Name is that even though there are so many processes mentioned in the Vedic literature, the Holy Name or the process of pure devotional service is in a completely different category. One can perform yajnas, something like this, for material benefits, but chanting the Holy Name is far beyond any such idea. Or one can go on pilgrimages to holy places for material benefits, or one can perform vows for material benefits. It used to be a common thing for Hindu wives, actually no, they all used to do, they would fast one day a week for the benefit of their husband. I don't think anyone even heard of this anymore. But until recently it was quite common. Do you know that? You heard about your grandmother doing it, something like that. Nowadays, you tell the girls, they say, forget it. They don't even want to feed their husband. You can get something out of the fridge. What does he want need me to feed? I'm just, you know, he just gives me sex, that's all. That's the only function of the husband. Nothing else to do. And if you become fed up with him, then kick him out, get another one. There are plenty of men around. Anyway, I always liked that guy in the office better than my husband. Getting off the topic here, the glories of the Holy Name. So yeah, the Holy Name is not for any material benefit. That's a good thing that the wife should be dedicated to the husband, but the Holy Name is not for any material benefit. It's in a completely different category. It takes us beyond all kinds of material benefits that can be offered in the Vedas. Having come to the standard of chanting the holy names under the guidance of a guru, one should hear from him and understand that we're not the body. So if one is determined to remain in the bodily of concept of life, for instance thinking I'm Indian, I'm Hindu, or I'm Malaysian, cheer on the Malaysian, what do they have? What's the major sport here? Cricket? Football. Cheer on the Malaysian football team. But that's a useless team. I never heard of them. They have the interstate football, don't they? What state is this? Sabah? Johor, of course. So cheer on the Johor football team against the PJ, what is it? Kuala Lumpur, Selangor. It's all nonsense. The Indians here are not interested in cricket. They're not. You can't really be an Indian if you're not interested in cricket. That's modern India. It's all nonsense. If we're interested in these things, we're in Maya. Well, that's why we're in this material world. That's why we accept initiation. That's why we chant the holy names. So get out of Maya and come to Krishna. But if we maintain attachment to such things, then that's also an offense, because how are we going to advance in Krishna consciousness? What's the point of chanting Hare Krishna, which means to pray to Krishna, oh Krishna, please engage me in your service. Well, not just now, because I have to go to the football game. I'll do the arati quickly before I go. And we should chant attentively. Inattentive chanting. That's the most difficult. What's the easiest thing we have to do every day? Is chant Hare Krishna. Very easy. Just open your mouth and chant. It's also the most difficult thing we have to do. Because to chant attentively seems to be very difficult. So it's hard work, but we have to try. If we try, Krishna will help us. So, Hare Krishna. There's much more to be said. I won't say more now except to give the beads and name.